So for bringing in that self-compassion, kind of along what we're talking about, the curiosity portion is really important. It is, you know, what is self-compassion? And I think something you and I have discussed before is the very interesting thing we've noticed about clients, and that they will have a lot of compassion for other people, but then their internal talk or their self-compassion is not equivalent. Like there seem to be a much more.
Does that sound like you? Are you self-critical? Are you not self-compassionate? Well, you may think you love yourself and you might love your life and stuff, but that judgment, that critical voice can really dominate how you choose to eat. And aren't you curious to see if there's a different way of doing this? Well, this is what Reagan and I are going to cover in today's episode of the One Small Bite podcast. So tune in, cue the music. Here we go. You're listening to the One Small Bite podcast with me, your host, David Orozco. For over a decade, I've built a successful nutrition practice helping thousands of people thrive, nourish their life, and break the cycle of crazy diets. We will take one small bite at a time to transform your health and develop a positive relationship to food. So let's chop the diet mentality, fuel your body, and nourish your soul. Okay, are you ready? Let's do this. That's right. This is the episode where we're going to learn how curiosity with food, wondering what is a better way to living fully, enjoying food, and not getting all wrapped up and lost in diet culture, and then using self-compassion for ourselves so we can find kindness and so we can find forgiveness and enjoy the foods that we eat without all of those rules and rigidity that really makes it very difficult going into one diet, going out of another diet. And this, my friends, is exactly what I talk about in my upcoming book, One Small Bite, Anti-Diet Stories That Help You Build a Positive Relationship to Food. And hey, I'm self-publishing this book, but I'll tell you, this book is not a story about me and the best approach. You know what it is? It's vignettes. It's wonderful stories about people like Angela and Catalina and Erica and Meredith, who are human givers. They're so giving of themselves. And with a little bit of curiosity and with a little bit of self-compassion, they start transforming their lives out of that hamster wheel of diet cycles and weight loss and weight gain. And what they discover is how to find peace with food, how to live fully, how to enjoy the foods that they eat. And I am excited to have Reagan Perkins today to talk to us about how this occurs and how that works. So join in. I know you're going to love this episode. Oh, by the way, a little apology again. The audio wasn't recorded with my microphone, so it's coming through my speakers and my mic on my computer. But you know what? You can hear me. It's good. All right, let's get started with the interview.
Hey, Reagan. Welcome to the One Small Bite podcast.
Hi, David. It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, same here. I'm excited because we get to talk about a subject that is in my book. Well, two subjects, really. But you've been on a show before, so you've done this. And I know that people would love to hear a little bit about you and what you do at Orozco Nutrition. But why don't you give them a little background first about you and maybe something special?
Okay, yeah. So I am a registered dietitian and clinical supervisor at Orozco Nutrition. And I have been with the team for a little over a year now. My niche, I guess, is focusing on working my clients through intuitive eating or some gentle nutrition strategies. And lately, I really notice my clients with PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome, something you've covered in a previous podcast, I think one of your Friday Foodcasts actually, mm-hmm. and diabetes, as well as a couple of other things is where I focus my nutrition care with. I'm really driven with the compassionate care and helping to build a broader community. Fun facts is I have two dogs that I greatly love and a husband that's very special to me. I play the alto saxophone. That's a fun fact. Oh,
that's right. Yeah, I forgot about that. That's so cool. Do you play that on a regular basis?
I'm trying to get back into it. I did take a few years off because I was living in an apartment and that's a little awkward. And it's been a little hard to get back into it, but I did recently buy, you're going to love this, sheet music for all of the Star Wars episodes.
No way. You got to be kidding me. Oh, I got to come over to your place so we can play some Star Wars stuff. I could just see you playing some of that in the... in the bar scene when people were
that's the
in.
First one I started on actually is the Oga's Cantina bar.
That's it I forgot the name of it, but I'm glad that you brought it. That's so cool. That is neat. And people, so just so you know, Reagan has a mug that has is it a Grogu on it, or is it Yoda?
It's Grogu. It's a play on the Starbucks emblem, and instead of the girl or whatever that's in the middle of the Starbucks symbol, it's Grogu.
Yeah, the siren instead of the siren, it's Grogu. Yeah, and I'm usually when we have our team meetings, I'm holding a Darth Vader mug.
Yep.
So big fans. I think many people know that about me, which is cool. So, let's get into the topic. I think that's really important to chat about today. I know that we can chat a little bit more about Star Wars, but I'm sure that that's not what they want to hear. Although maybe I should make a podcast episode just, no, anyway. compassion and curiosity, or curiosity and compassion. I'd like to start off with, a few questions. So why curiosity and compassion? What is it important and why is it impactful?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really great question. When we're talking about curiosity and compassion, with some of the things that I've read about and what I've learned from being a dietitian, is those are really beneficial for just about everyone. It's something that's kind of innate in humans as well. And that can really help with facilitating the work that I do with my clients, is enacting that curiosity factor or showing clients that compassion that they may not be able to show themselves right now.
And how do you do that? What do you mean by that when you say, show them that compassion that they may not see?
So I guess an example would be for several of my clients, they'll start to be like, I didn't get stuff done. You know, we talked about this last week or 2 weeks ago, and I didn't do it like I thought I would. And I can see them starting to be down on themselves. And that compassion component is like, it's okay. Life happens. And I accept that. I accept you for who you are and where you're at.
I see. So you're giving them compassion, but I think what I'm also hearing you saying is that you're helping them create self-compassion as well. Mm-hmm. And so this is more of a two-way street. By you being compassionate, they can be self-compassionate, and thereby you can be self-compassionate as well within yourself. Okay, that's good. So what about curiosity? Why curiosity?
I think curiosity is amazing. I've just been a very curious person for a very long time. When we were talking about this podcast, I actually started reflecting a little bit. And my mom, about a week ago, told me this story about how my teachers in school loved and hated me because if I got a question wrong, I would take up my wrong question and I would ask them to tell me why. like my curiosity. Like I was just like, I need to know why I missed this. I need to know. I just needed to know. And that's that like curiosity component that like I've personally just I've had for a very long time. But with curiosity and the work that I do with clients, or why I think curiosity is really impactful in like nutrition work and the weight inclusive space, is that let's get curious about food. Because that's something that we've just consumed for so long, right? We've been eating since we were born.
Yeah, we continue eating.
So, and then when I was researching, I noticed that curiosity has been studied for hundreds of years.
Oh, really? Tell me.
Yeah. So this was in a research study that I found. So the five-dimensional curiosity scale, and it talks about the beginning, and it actually said that when they were researching curiosity, like other research about curiosity, they saw studies as far back as 1890.
Hmm, interesting. Okay.
So just like, why are we curious? Why do humans wonder? Because it's a type, curiosity is something that is in like all mammals, I believe, or all animals. They've noticed in some of the studies. Again, I'm not like a specialist in this. It's just my general thought or what I've noticed when I've been researching on my own. But the curiosity can be something that has led many, many innovations over time as well. And I think when, you know, you mentioned your book earlier on, and you let me have a little insight read on your book. And that was something you mentioned in there as well, which was why I started looking up research on curiosity. But you mentioned that curiosity has like led a lot of different innovations.
That's true. I have. And I think that you bring up something that's really important, that it is innate in every human being. And so, if you ask who actually needs compassion or curiosity, we can actually say that it's going to be everyone, that without it, we are not human and we are not capable of living. I know this may sound like a crazy, or not that I know, but this may sound like an odd tangent, but I often wonder how an animal feels when their offspring, like a bird, when a chick dies. Do they feel sadness? Do they feel compassion? Do they feel, you know, I always wonder that, but I know that as a human, we definitely feel that.
And
I love that idea, because both curiosity is in that as well as compassion. And I'm thinking about the compassion in an animal, but I'm curious about it.
Yeah, like you're curious if other creatures experience compassion in the same way that we do, which is really funny because you're both being compassionate and also curious.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, then let me ask you this. How do you facilitate curiosity and compassion in people?
Well, if any of my clients are listening, they'll start giggling throughout this part. And they may not even realize that I do this in our appointments, but I'll be that curiosity factor. And I'll say, you know, what you're saying really makes me curious right now. And then I'll ask for them to tell me more about a topic, or ask for them to tell me more about what they mean, or I'll ask, ooh, that's really interesting. What do you mean by this? Or if something comes up, I'll tell them like, huh, I'm hearing what you're saying, and I wonder, curiosity, if this handout might be helpful for you, or different things like that. So I kind of sprinkle in or these little seeds of curiosity along the way and try to help model them to be curious for themselves. It's like, you know, why don't, like, next time you experience that with eating, or, you know, the next time you're a little unsure about a food, pause and get curious. Wonder why. Why do I think this? Why do I feel like I can't eat past a certain time?
I like that you said something really key to there, and that is pausing. I thought that was really important to tease out there, because oftentimes I find that we are so, so busy and running ourselves ragged and on autopilot every day, like it's Groundhog Day, day after day after day. And we don't often pause to then be able to actually recognize, to therefore be curious. Another thought comes to mind is one of the benefits of the pandemic, of the COVID pandemic. And yes, there is a very big benefit to the COVID pandemic. And that is, it gave us a very, very, very important moment to pause and pay attention to how important it is to slow down and take in some very important aspects of life, like family and introspection and awareness and presence. So I love that you're bringing that up there. Where do you think people could then, from the example that you gave by planting the seeds so that they're curious about the foods, what are they paying attention to? What are those external or internal cues?
It's really dependent on the individual. Okay. What we're working on, since it is a, since Orozco Nutrition and the dietitian, you, myself, and the other dietitians at Orozco Nutrition take a compassionate and individualized approach. That with an example, like a client of mine that's snacking really often in the late evenings. We talked about being curious about when the first signs of hunger are happening. And as we've been curious and as we've been pausing to notice when that's happening, we're noticing the hunger a little bit earlier in the day and implementing a meal or a snack earlier in the day seems to be reducing the amount of snacking in the evenings. And that was like that, like pausing for a second in a specific example, that I've used with a few of my clients about identifying what's really going on here. Why are we snacking later in the day? It's like, was it because of boredom? Was it because of this or that? Or was it because we weren't noticing our cues earlier in the day because we were moving too quickly?
That's really nice. What do you think people have learned, that one person in particular, what do you think they ended up did learn? And can you go and elaborate a little bit more on what she learned by pausing and paying attention to what her body was telling you, her?
Oh, the biggest thing I feel like they've learned is what other signs of hunger feel like.
Exactly. Okay. And what did you learn by her doing that?
That it's different for everyone. That's probably the biggest thing, is I continue to be curious with clients, curious with myself, is that everyone is just so different.
That's so true. Well, you know, just being the devil's advocate here, to play more on curiosity, I can see a listener thinking, all right, David, this is great. I love this, makes sense. But how is this going to help me from not overeating? Or how is being curious going to help me from gaining weight? Or how is being curious going to help me by losing weight?
Okay. Yeah, I can understand that. And I always like having both sides of the conversation. You know, really and truly, I can't guarantee that any of my suggestions are really going to impact someone's weight. That is determined by genetics more than anything else. But what I have seen, or how I do feel like this can help, is if you feel like the snacking in the evenings is causing you to feel guilty, or causing you to feel like, well, this is why I'm gaining weight, or why I am the way that I am, we can work on removing that shame component by being curious, identifying our hunger cues, and listening to our body earlier in the day. Because it's more than likely, with the client that I gave an example of, reduces the late night snacking. That's really that source of shame.
That's good. That's really beneficial for a lot of people. I would also add that the idea of being curious opens the possibility of experimentation, and that by being curious, you would think, I wonder if, and that's another big part of the curiosity is that, that little sound that we make versus that, which is sort of like the end. I don't want to do this anymore. The is opening that door to, I wonder if, or, hey, let me try it this way. And therefore you experiment. I had recently interviewed Reed Garcia, who is a course developer, and he created this Kickstart Your Kitchen cooking basics. And he was talking about getting started in the kitchen. And I said to him, yeah, but I mean, what do you do if you don't know how to cook? And he touched on the very curiosity. He said, just be curious. What would you like to eat? What would be something simple that you would enjoy eating that would be, you know, not necessarily having to cook a gourmet meal? And I said, peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And he goes, all right. And I said, but how is that cooking? And he said, don't you have to toast the bread? And I said, oh, okay. But come on, that's not cooking. And he said, but that's where you start. You know, you get yourself in there and you then think, I wonder if I could put the toast. I know this is probably jumping 10 feet ahead or 10 steps ahead, but I wonder.
Yeah, I get where you're going.
I wonder if I could take that toast and then chop or cut a little hole in it and, you know, cook an egg while the toast and the egg are on the pan. And then now you've got a little recipe going, you got a little cooking going on, right? Or maybe you cook an egg and you put it on top of the toast, so on and so forth. And so it all starts with that curiosity. It opens the door to experimentation, and then experimentation leads to that growth, which I think is really, really important. Well, and then I'm going to just continue on a little bit more and talk.
Sorry for interjecting.
Yeah, go ahead.
You bring up that part of curiosity, and what you're talking about is it leads to exploration. Yeah. And I think that's crucial. And as you're speaking, something that popped in my head was when you're curious, there isn't a right or wrong answer.
Ooh, that's good.
Right?
That's good.
Like,
tell me more.
Like, well, I mean, you're being curious. You're trying to find out something, and not necessarily find answers, but just think about it a little bit deeper. And if you're thinking about your own perspective, there's not a right or wrong answer in your perspective around food, just like being curious leading to exploration. Same thing. You're being curious about what can I do in a kitchen? Start with something you're familiar with and then add on top of it. Get curious. And it's not really wrong.
I love that, because I think that also, if you don't mind me jumping ahead here, I think it also leads into the compassion piece, right? Because if there isn't a right and wrong, then that is by in it of itself a definition of self-compassion, because you're not being that critical voice on yourself. You're accepting it, and you're capable of then using that in one way or another and saying, oh, you know what? If I do it this way, it's not going to taste the way I want it to. But if I do it this way, and I do it this way because I learned from my mistake, or I learned from when I did it last, and I only learned because I was curious and therefore explored or experimented.
Yeah, failure is a learning opportunity more than anything.
Oh, I got to quote a Yoda here in this. Okay, this is a Yoda quote. Failure, what is it? I can't say the quote right.
Greatest teacher failure is.
Thank you. Yes. Greatest teacher failure is. Yes. I've used it so often. That's in my book. And I love that, because you're right. I will tell you, though, without a doubt, failure hurts.
Absolutely.
Failure absolutely hurts. And it is the mindset that really drives you forward. And therefore, the mindset starts with that compassion piece. All right, so let's move over into compassion. I think we got a good idea of curiosity and how exploration and experimentation, and then learning from that, and their growth, therefore. And so now let's tie in this piece of compassion where it sits, I think, really squarely with the next step, if you will. How does someone find that compassion then? How does that a person bring in that self-compassion? What would you say?
So for bringing in that self-compassion, kind of along what we're talking about, the curiosity portion is really important. It is, you know, what is self-compassion? And I think something you and I have discussed before is the very interesting thing we've noticed about clients, and that they will have a lot of compassion for other people, but then their internal talk or their self-compassion is not equivalent. Like they seem to be much more critical of themselves, or, but I should be doing better. Even though they say, oh yeah, but I understand where that person's at and that's okay. And it's like, well, why can't we understand where you're at?
Mm,
and again, there's that question, that curiosity. It's like, well, why is it hard for you to have that compassion for yourself? And then that really kind of stems into a lot of the work that will go on as well, is touching on that itself.
What would be a taboo or about compassion or self-compassion?
The taboo many people feel about self-compassion is that if they're prioritizing themselves, then they're being selfish.
Ooh, tell me more.
So, and again, like noticing with like clients, a generality in clients is that same self-compassion or prioritizing their needs along with the needs of the people that they care about feels icky. It feels like, oh, well, I'm centering myself and being selfish. And in reality, when we're not taking care of ourselves, it makes it harder for us to take care of the people that we care about.
Oh, it's like that analogy that I give to a lot of clients about being on the plane, right? You're going on the plane, you're going on a trip, and the flight attendants or the airline is always going to give you the safety features before they leave. They're required by FDA or FAA standards. And they talk about if the cabin pressure would suddenly drop, the compartments overhead will drop down your oxygen mask. And if you're traveling with a child, they tell you, put the mask on yourself first, because you're no good to a child if you're dead.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that that's really, really important. I am going to challenge you though, because I think there is some, and I'm going to be a little bit just simply binary here with gender. I think that from a masculine or from a male perspective, I think self-compassion is a little bit different, because I don't think men see self-compassion as selfish. I don't even know if most men even think about self-compassion.
I think I understand. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they recognize compassion, but I don't think they recognize self-compassion. And I think that there is a little bit of a difference. I can totally see a woman being more compassionate to others. And I think that that's where we talk about sort of this human giver syndrome. And I've talked about in the past in previous episodes, where generally it's most more women than it is men, that they are so giving of themselves. They're constant. It's like the point that you made a little while ago about how they wouldn't treat someone else as poorly as they treat themselves. You know, they're giving to other people, or they give their time to their employer, to their child, to a sibling, to a parent, to friends, to their church, to even strangers. They're very compassionate towards others, but it's the self-compassion that's really, really important. And I think with men, I don't think men really often see that. And I think that there's a missing piece, because I think that the masculinity norms in the United States really prevent men from recognizing emotion, and thereby it's not a masculine trait. Would you agree?
I agree with you completely, because that would be the other taboo, is from a male perspective, compassion isn't a masculine trait.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So compassion, period, compassion for others or even self-compassion
right.
itself, just like the general, just compassion is not viewed as being a masculine trait. So it is something that's kind of stunted early on.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Which is why we try to give clients that path to greater compassion. And one of the ways we do that is by using those seeds that you mentioned a little while ago, that it starts with curiosity, and that curiosity is then listening to what the body is telling them, with like with that person that snacks at night. And what is it that their body is telling them in regards to that snack? I have worked with male clients that they'll say, well, I don't know, I just eat because I always eat. And I'm like, okay, well, that means that your body is telling you something and we're not listening. And moving through those little seeds is the ability to grow and indirectly build that self-empathy or that self-kindness that allows them to be more aware of their bodies. And it's like you said, to be able to eat more in line with what their bodies are needing or what their values are in life. I love that. I think that that's really, really important. All right. I'm going to throw another important part to all of this, because I think that it's so prevalent in so many of our clients. We have so many clients that are just overwhelmed. I mean, they've got a gazillion things going on. How the heck do we help them with curiosity and compassion when, you know, they've got a full-time job and they're caring for their elders, or they have children, or they have financial strains, or they only have one car in the household, so on and so forth. And they've just got deadlines and bills and so on and so forth. How do we help people navigate through curiosity and compassion? And I know I'm putting you a little bit on the spot.
No, that's totally fine. Well, an unapologetic plug here is setting up an appointment with me or one of our other dietitians.
Good one. I like that.
Because the thing is we can provide that space for them, because they would have that 1 hour appointment with us to do that, and it would be in their schedule. Now I do get that sometimes that's the time restraint makes that really difficult. But it would be for them really dependent on where they're at, and each listener is going to be different. A general guide, I would just say finding one time in the day where they can just pause and either show themselves compassion or curiosity. That can take 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's really helpful. All right. Let me go a little bit further here and ask, well, okay, to be the devil's advocate. So like I did a little while ago, self-compassion sounds great. Curiosity sounds great. Okay, I need to slow down. I really need to pay attention more to my body and what I'm doing. Then what? Then what do I do with it? Now what?
You listen.
Okay. All right. And what does that mean?
Listen to what you're hearing back from your body.
Give me an example.
I'm getting curious. Okay, so I have a good example for what you're talking about with a client that I've had with type 2 diabetes for a few years. We were focusing in on lowering their A1C, because that's really the main goal for most endocrinologists or primary care physicians when they have someone with type 2 diabetes. And we were pausing a lot and just asking, well, what do you want? What feels good? I removed a lot of the shame around carbs. And surprisingly, not really surprising to me, but surprisingly in the how things played out, providing a significant amount of education and understanding about diabetes really helped this client understand why timing of food can be really helpful. And when we started asking about, well, why isn't when you're eating right now working for you, and showing that self-compassion, they started eating more consistently throughout the day. and eventually started working towards adding a medication, which was something that they were very off the table before. But after understanding why the medication could be beneficial, they started the lowest dose of a medication that they could possibly do and decreased their A1C from in the top, the mid to low eights, like 8 point something along the lines of that, down to mid sixes. So like a 6.4 or 6.6 or something along those lines. And that's a pretty drastic change in A1C just over several months.
And she did that by being curious and being compassionate. And if so, how?
Yeah. The curiosity around like, why am I choosing the food that I'm choosing? Is it because it's what I really want? Is it because I've been told that I can't have this food for so long by doctors and I refuse to, not refuse necessarily, but that diet rebel that pops up, you know, we've talked about diet rebel before.
I just had Jennifer on talking about those food voices and the diet rebel. So
perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. So that diet rebel that will pop up and be like, they're telling me I can't have sweets. Well, I want to eat all of the sweets. And when that permission is given to like, you can still have sweets, and getting curious about why we want sweets, and then showing that compassion, that it makes sense that their stories played out the way that it's played, really reduced a lot of the stress that they had around eating and really helped with them implementing stuff that we discussed and lowering their A1C.
So she started with you with an A1C at about 8 or so. Mm-hmm. 8%, and then it went down to 6 point something, 6 point what?
Yeah, mid-sixes.
Mid-sixes. Okay. And I just to digress a little bit and let people know about A1C. A1C stands for hemoglobin A1C, which is a variable or a number that is the percentage of glucose that is attached to dead red blood cells. And the half-life or the lifespan of red blood cells is approximately 3 months. Right. And so those tests, the A1C, is essentially telling a physician what the person's average blood sugars have been over the last 3 months. And so an A1C of 8% it translates into their average blood sugars are around what? Do you know off the top of your head, Reagan?
Around what? If we're talking. No, off the top of my head, I would be guesstimating right now.
Yeah, I think it's somewhere, an 8% is somewhere around 200 to 220, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And so that is high. That's your averaging blood sugars, which is pretty high. But you can look that up. I think the American Diabetes Association has a quick chart on that. And I think, Reagan, you're probably looking it up, so that would help. But then Google's an amazing thing. Sometimes it can be a very dangerous thing, right?
Very dangerous thing.
But to go down to in the mid sixes, that is a significant blood sugar change. And I think I really want to emphasize this because Reagan is bringing up something that is extremely important. A lot of people will get frustrated with the anti-diet, weight-inclusive, health at every size, intuitive eating approach that we have. And by frustrated, I mean that people aren't reaching their quote unquote goal weight or they're not losing weight. But we have an example here of a client that Reagan has that through curiosity and compassion, and of course, other work that she's done with her. And it's not something that happened overnight. Like you said a little while ago, Reagan, it happened over the course of several months. We saw her blood sugars drop significantly. And that's really, really important. And it goes to being compassionate about the fact that you're having some sugar and then being curious as to what your body is telling you about that. And therefore, it really untangles or it stops the stranglehold that it has on someone, it being sugar or the candy. And therefore, the relationship to eating is much more secure. It's much more positive. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right, cool. Did you find the numbers by any chance?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
I lowered this the folder. So 8% is right around like 180 or above. Oh. So if you're like mid eights, it's going to be closer to that, like 200.
Yeah, okay.
And then like six is about 130.
Okay. That's great. That's yeah. I mean, think about that. If you're in the mid 180s to close to 200s and you're dropping it down on average, dropping it down to the 130s to 140s. I mean, wow, what a big difference that's going to be, and how much it's going to help your kidneys and your blood pressure and your eyes and your nerve endings and your well-being.
Mood.
Yeah. Food. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Mood. No mood.
Oh, mood. Mood.
Mood.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Okay. So let's then step into what would be an approach that the listener can take away. You did mention working with us, and I think that that's not a shameless plug. I think it is important working with a registered dietitian, nutritionist, a therapist that are weight inclusive or have a concept and an awareness or training of health at every size and a non-diet or an anti-diet approach. So, all right, let's take this from a practical standpoint. What can people do right now that will get them closer to curiosity and compassion in order to help them feel better or improve their health if they can't work with a dietitian or a therapist?
So really, it's again, like, depending on the person, if there's someone that's overly critical of themselves for that compassion component, let's slow down. Slowing down and showing yourself some compassion, simply saying, it's okay, I'm okay, and I'm enough, are like huge steps in that direction. And that's without having to go down this whole path of exploring what compassion means and what compassion is and how to be compassionate to yourself. Just saying like, I am enough and this is okay, is huge in that step, where this food is enough or anything along those lines can really help with that compassion component. If they're just going through the motions on their daily basis and they're unsure of why they choose the foods that they choose, or they're unsure about their drivers or their motivators, it's that it's pausing and saying, huh, I wonder. And their brain will fill in that blank. I wonder, well, what do I wonder? Well, that's a great question. What do you wonder? Ask yourself that.
Yeah, I love that. Like I mentioned a little while ago, the as well as the I wonder if, or I wonder, yeah, that will push you into that exploration or that experimentation, which I think is so important. Thanks, Reagan. I think that that's something really simple that people can start off with. And I will add the importance of consistency in this. If you commit to that and you're just consistent with that one part right there, Kia and I talked about that very, very point there about the path to change. 95% of what clients are doing is really changing their mindset, not their behaviors. Because everything that you do starts with a feeling or a thought. And you're not often doing things without it. Even though we are working on autopilot, this slowing down and wondering what's something different that I can do is really a great start. So appreciate you for saying that. Thanks, Reagan. You want to leave the listeners with any last words or thoughts?
Well, the non-existent recording of me playing the saxophone will never come out.
Oh, don't you fret. I will probably record you without you knowing, and it will come out.
I will never play my saxophone in one of our meetings.
You never know. I might have spies. No, I'm just kidding.
No, Yeah, I feel like you'll probably. So funny fact for the listeners. My I'll refer to my husband as Dave, but you and my husband have the same. So maybe you'll figure something out there, or you guys have the same name. So maybe you'll figure out something, because he would probably be into pranking me in that manner.
Ooh, you shouldn't have told me that.
I know. I'm going to have to be real cautious for a while now.
Oh, all right, Reagan. Well, thanks. I appreciate you being on, and I'm going to have you on again, and everybody else, so we can chat some more about a lot of the stuff that we do. Thanks again, and I appreciate you for being on.
Thanks. It was great speaking with you again. I hope everyone enjoys our conversation.
That's right. And go Darth Vader.
Have you started a Boba Fett yet?
Heck yeah. You kidding me?
Okay. Both episodes?
Yes, I've seen both episodes already.
Most I've ever seen about the sand people.
I know, me too. That I love how they developed that character line. I thought that was really important. And they're doing that with like the Bad Batch, and they did that with Clone Wars, and they did that, you know, they did a lot of different groups of Star Wars. They elaborate their characters. I love that in Mandalorian, obviously.
Yeah,
I thought that was brilliant. So, all right, cool. All right, peeps. Reagan is going to be on the show again, so stay tuned. And she is open for business as well. She's got a clinic day on Wednesdays, and she does virtual appointments. So feel free, if you want to set up a discovery call with her, just go to our website, oroskanutrition.com, click on schedule an appointment, and you can then schedule a discovery, 15-20 minute discovery call with Reagan or myself or Kia or Jennifer, and they are available for clients. So thanks again, Reagan. I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you, David. Have a great day.
You know, I wonder if Disney is going to develop the Grogu character. I'm sure they are, because it's all about compassion in the Jedi Knights, right? Do you like the way I tied that in? Curiosity about whether they're going to do it and the compassion. Anyway, I hope you enjoy that episode. I think that Reagan was really just awesome. She has a really good perspective. Hey, go to oroskonutrition.com, click on make an appointment or schedule an appointment, and set something up for a free 15-20 minute discovery call. We're all available, and we don't do it every day, but we're all available there. So go to our website, check it out, and make an appointment for free. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed this podcast episode. And listen, if you want a great resource for compassion, the guru and the person that really coined self-compassion, that really made it mainstream, is Dr. Kristen Neff. I think that her book, Self-Compassion, The Proven Power of Being Kind to Yourself, is just a phenomenal book that I think everybody should read. And there is also a self-compassion workbook that goes along with it. And I think she's also coming out with a new book in the next few months, if I'm not mistaken. So definitely check out the work from Kristen Neff. It's just fantastic. Folks, thank you so much for listening in. Please remember to subscribe to the show or click follow. And also, we'd love for you to rate and review. That always helps us tremendously. And just remember, chop that diet mentality, fuel your body, and nourish your soul. Until the next time, look forward to chatting with you soon. Take care. Oh, yeah.